Henry Lewis Horsfield, Reel 4.
Yes, he also wanted me to go on a course of gunnery, and also later on a course of rough riding. And as I said at the time, I was playing hockey 3 or 4 times a week, studying for my first, number one of headquarters, malaria every other day. Therefore, I couldn't have my payment leave again. So I said, well, if you do this, he said, I'll promise you the third stripe by April. Now, don't forget those days, promotion, it was a long-winded waiting game. You wait years for stripes. I know an officer who waited at least 13 years for promotion from lieutenant to captain. And so I thought, well, under the circumstances, I won't get the third stripe. I'll get the third degree under 6 feet of sand, the way I was going. I was going to a skeleton. Every other day, my type of malaria used to come on. There's half a dozen different types of malaria. And the malaria I got, it had come on about midday. I'd stop sweating, which is the dangerous thing to do out there. I'd stop sweating. My muscles used to ache. I'd be flexing my muscles, trying to stretch them. And then I'd come over queer. I'd get quinine. That didn't do me any good at all. 2 or 3 times I went in hospital. All right, next day, out of hospital. Next day, it had come on again. So what I used to do, get some aspirins, a cup of hot tea, borrow a couple of blankets, and don't forget this is 110 in the shade, get in bed and sweat it out. The sheets used to be wet through with sweat. Then go out and have a game of hockey. A few pints of beer after the shower, sit in the NCO's mess, bringing the sweat out of my handkerchief. Next day, okay. Next day, malaria back again. So as you can guess, I was not much of me to start with. So eventually I went up the hills, and by the grace of God, I found something which cured me, because quinine didn't do any good at all. It made me sick, nearly got me placed under arrest one morning, about 6:30, for being drunk in charge of the guard. I wasn't drunk at all. About 6 o'clock, I felt the malaria come on. I sent the attending man up to the hospital to get some quinine, took the quinine. About the same time, I had the early morning cup of tea. Just then, the orderly officer come and turned the guard out. There's me stood at the end of the guard, swaying. Swore blind, I was drunk. And overcame that, of course.
So what was it you found?
Well, when I was up there, up the hills at Dullycap, about 6 weeks, I think, the RSM school teacher came to see me, wanted to know I wasn't studying for me first at night time. Because I was doing pay sergeant up there as well. I said, what's the use? I'm down with malaria every other day. So I said, have you tried eosinophily? I said, who? He said, eosinophily. I said, yeah, spell it. So he spelled it. Eosinophele, eosinophily, which is the name of the mosquito from which you get this malaria from. He says, it's a bit expensive. I think he said it was, if I remember, about 5 rupees a bottle. 3 bottles was a course. I said, well, I'll try anything once. So I got some of this. It's an Italian cure. And it cured me. Now, here's a strange point. When I came home from India, April, which is about 2 or 3 months afterwards, I got to Otley on leave, Oh, change of climate, back in the malaria. I thought, oh God, what can I do now? Quitting's no good. In fact, it's only a small market town, it's Otley. I don't suppose the chemists will ever have heard of it. But if you don't try, you can't succeed. So I went up to the chemist. I said, have you such a thing as a bottle of Eosinophilus? Yes, sir, here.
Now, why do you think that the army didn't have drugs like this?
You're asking me. You didn't get looked after those days like you do these days.
So you weren't very satisfied with the medical treatment that you got in the army?
As I say, there's at least half a dozen types of malaria. And of course, I suppose each one wants its separate cure. I happened to be lucky and found mine. Because, as I say, quinine was doing no good.
What about the health and sanitation arrangements in the barracks which the army had? Did you find those effective?
They had to be, in that climate. And the sanitation had to be good. It was, but it was primitive. It wasn't as far advanced as what it is today. The toilets, for instance, were about 50 yards away from the bungalows, outside toilets. Buckets, wooden seats and buckets underneath, which the Indians used to have to cart away. No lighting facilities or anything. You'd go in the pitch dark and strike matches or have a torch. And they were primitive, but they had to be. The authorities were strict on them. They had to be. There's another point I was going to mention about the malaria. I managed to cure myself with another three bottles. But over the years, I used to get a little touch occasionally, and I was told by more than one person, if you could go clear for 7 years, you're all right, you'd finish with it. I think that's correct, because I haven't had an attack or touch of it for years now.
Was malaria the only disease that you got in India?
Did I have any more? Mm. I had sandfly fever.
What's that?
Well, it's where you get bitten by the flies off the sand, and that's similar to malaria, the symptoms and that. But it's not as severe as malaria or prolonged. I remember I got it when I was in Chiblagiri. I went in hospital with it. I was in a few days. I was just coming out. The MO said, oh, you stuck where you are. I'd got yellow jaundice with it. So I managed to get rid of that. I think that's all I had.
You've got jaundice because of the sandfly fever?
I think so. Mm. Yeah. Anyhow, it's funny, it came on just as I was finished with the sandfly fever.
Did you get any other sicknesses in India?
No, I think that's
just
all.
Just those two. Did you ever have any accidents?
No.
You were telling me about an accident you had to your thumb.
Oh, yeah, well, I think I've told you about that before, haven't I?
Not on the tape.
Haven't I?
No.
Well, that was just to demonstrate the kind of treatment you got those days. Put it briefly, my right thumb got trapped between two hockey sticks, which is jolly painful. I didn't sleep all night. And next morning I went sick. The thumb was swollen, black and blue. He rode up on his horse with a nurse at the side of him. He was going out riding, but there was about half a dozen of us. He was Irish. He says, step forward, anybody who's really sick. I said, yes, sir. Look at my thumb. Oh, he said, a bit of grooming will cure that.
Bit of grooming?
Yeah, grooming the horses. I thought, thank you very much. Twice I had that. As you can see, my thumbnail won't grow properly as a result. And
what effect did the grooming have on your bad thumb?
It sent the blood circulating down and made it hellishly painful, didn't it? In other words, no treatment. And it's a long yarn about me ear, what's called me deafness, but it goes back to that. I went to bed one night as usual, fit as a fiddle. Then I got an earache with a vengeance. And I was delirious during the night. The boys were going to send for an ambulance, but I quietened down.
This was in India, was it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. So, this is 1925. Still in Simulgiri. And I quietened down, so they didn't send for the ambulance. Next morning, fortunately, the earache had gone. The side of my neck was as stiff as a poker, and I couldn't, painful, and I couldn't turn it. So I reported sick, and I got no treatment. Grooming will cure that, because at that time there was a lot of lead swinging going on with some of the chaps. Speaking generally, not just our unit, there was a lot of genuine ear trouble out in India, under the climate, especially disease of the middle ear. Some of them got invalid at home with it, you see. And of course, the chaps who didn't like India tried this on to get invalid at home, although there was nothing wrong with them.
So they all claimed that they'd got this disease, yeah, of the middle ear.
So I suppose they all thought I was one of them. No, I wasn't. Anyhow, I got over it temporarily, and then the right ear started to fill up with wax a lot. And I went deaf. But it was only wax. So I used to go down the MI room periodically when it was getting filled up and get it swilled out with hydrogen of peroxide. All right, I could hear that, feel it bubbling in my ear, then he used to swill the wax out. All right for a period. But of course the authorities have learnt since then that this hydrogen of peroxide was damaging the ear, because they don't do it now, but it's too late for me. That was the original cause of my deafness.
So in fact the army treatment made you deaf, yeah. made you deaf, and you're still hard of hearing now because of that.
That's right.
Could you tell me what the rations were like in India?
Well, I can't recollect any specific menus, anything. But the food was pretty good out there, what I remember of it. Better than what it was in England. What I particularly used to enjoy was breakfast. We used to have to go over to the cookhouse, get your breakfast, and take it into the dining hall. And outside the dining hall would be the dude waller.
Who was he?
The milkman. squatted on his haunches there with his milk can. And he used to get some porridge, plate of porridge, and go to him and buy one or two dozies worth.
What's a dozy?
Dozy, or ek anna, that's one anna. Or a dozy, that's two annas.
Yes, of
goat's cream, and put it on. And it used to be really enjoyable with that little, not much, only a couple of large spoonfuls really, of goat's cream, and it used to make it really palatable. I used to enjoy that. Then, of course, you used to get the usual things. Eggs, poached eggs, bread and butter. Lunch. I can't remember much about.
How were they purchased?
Pardon?
How did you buy the rations? Did you have a ration allowance? Or
oh, no, we didn't used to buy them.
No.
That's That business only started the last couple of years in the army. What we used to buy in those days, mostly in England, we used to do it in India as well. Go down and get some curry and rice and really hot curries to make it wet through with sweat. But the food wasn't good in England. That's where your money used to go. Going to the canteen and buying some food in the evening. But on the whole, it was much better in India.
So you didn't have to use the canteen or the naffy so much as you did in England?
Not as much as England, no.
I've asked you about clothing and health and sanitation quite a bit. What about recreations in the cantonments? How did you amuse yourselves?
Well, you used to get a certain amount of recreation riding the horses. I don't mean on parade, rough exercise, zest exercise and the usual drills, I don't mean that. We used to have competitions between ourselves, tent pegging.
What's that?
Well, you used to have the big lance and you used to have a peg stuck in the ground and go along and try and hook it up, which probably you've seen on the television with the police. Police still do it these days, the mounted police. Tent pegging, jumping, vaulting exercises, things like that. We used to have a certain amount of that, you see. And then every year, at least we'd have the mounted sports in the battery or the brigade. Apart from that, there was always boxing tournaments going on, inter-battery, inter-subsection. And football, and my particular sport, which I just ran my head off, was hockey. And we used to play some of the Indian teams. And believe me, some of the Indian teams could play in their bare feet.
They were really good players.
Yes, they could make rings around us, some of them.
What about drinking alcohol? You mentioned that earlier on.
Yes.
Was there a lot of that?
Yes, because say a normal day when there's nothing special on, just a routine day, no sports, no particular sports on at the time. Oh, you have the usual sports, running and all those things. You had plenty of sport, you see. That's the only three things you had to do. Was soldier, sports, drinking, gambling. You couldn't drink or gamble too much because you didn't have the money. But often enough, an average day, as an NCO at the time, get up in the morning, do your daily parades, game of hockey about 4:30. You knew you'd had it too. Wet through with sweat. Go and have a shower. And then go down the NCO's mess. Have 2 or 3 pints of beer. We used to drink what's called a top out there. Be a pint of bitter. You used to top it up with a drop of lemonade. You didn't used to make a shandy out of it. You used to top it up. That's why we called it a top. And that, in a hot climate like that, we're thirsty, especially after hockey, etc. The beer was inclined to be a bit sticky in your mouth. So, a little drop of lemonade, just top it up with that, used to take the stickiness out of it.
More refreshing.
Yes, and help to slake your thirst better. But I'm not exaggerating. I was sat in the NCO's mess in Jamsey, drink a pint of beer, get another pint. I'd be wiping the sweat off me with my handkerchief and wringing it out. And maybe if you felt like it, buy some curry and rice or egg and chips, something like that. Because that's why you were broke all the time, you see.
Did the army try to stop the troops drinking too much?
Oh, they didn't drink to that extent. No. They only drank when they had the money, and that was on the weekend. Mm.
Did you have any entertainments like theatre performances?
Yes, there used to be I can't remember having any performances like you've seen given to the troops by some of these well-known artists like they did during the war. See, that's a different thing altogether. Sending these big artists out to Burma and places like that to entertain the troops as a morale booster. No, it's a different thing altogether, but we never used to get them out there. I can't remember any anyhow. Not in those days.
So didn't you have any concerts or anything?
I'm trying to remember now. No, I can't remember having any. If we went to any concert or cinema or a dance, all right, at your own expense, just like going, anybody else going to...
The cinema that you mentioned was on the cantonment, was it?
Yeah.
Cantonment cinema.
Just, yeah. Well, it was within bounds. Mm. Open air, of course.
It was just for the troops, was it?
Yeah.
Did you have reading rooms?
No.
Any soldiers' institutes? Soldiers' homes?
We had soldiers' homes, but, you know, these are religious affairs, but they were more or less just like canteens. And they'd have a reading room, perhaps, with magazines and things like that. And they had all the religious homes out there.
Who ran them?
The religion.
Which religion?
Church of England and the Wesleyans and the various religions. They had their own outfits out there.
Did the Salvation Army do anything?
Yeah, oh yeah, the Salvation Army was there. But as I say, they're all more or less canteens. If you understand what I mean, you go there with the idea of having a meal, a cup of tea, and wander in the reading room, have a look at the magazines. And of course they used to have religious meetings.
What did the soldiers think of the Salvation Army's services there? Did they think they were useful?
Well, from what angle are you getting at?
Well, I was just wondering what the opinion of the soldiers, of the Salvation Army's services, did they find them useful or didn't they take much notice?
Well, they were a change from going to your own ordinary canteen. And, be a bit of a walk for you, but nothing spectacular about them. What I can remember, don't forget.
Which stations in India did you prefer? Which was the best stations?
I think the best station I prefer was Kirki.
Why was that?
Well, the main reason being that it was a nice climate, Kirki. Wasn't too bad, wasn't Kirki. The bungalows were quite nice. There was a bazaar there. Can't really remember much about it, but faint recollections of the bazaar. But the main thing is, it was only about 4 or 5 miles outside of Pune. You must have heard of Pune. All right. The snag was, it was all right being close to a place like Pune, but we never had any money to go there, you see. But I used to, a friend of mine, and myself, that I was doing pay sergeant towards the end of the 2 years at Kirki. And a friend of mine, young Sticky Coltus, he was a what weight now? The lowest weight, paperweight. He's a flyweight. I think he was champion of India, and consequently he was a bit well known. And he happened to get in with a trainer, horse racing trainer's daughter. I forget his name, but he was a trainer to Sir Victor Sassoon, the present family. But Sir Victor in those days, he used to race in India under the name of Mr. Eve, E-V-E. And the year we went there, Sir Victor won all the top racing prizes, Calcutta Cup, and races like that. Now, my friend, he got in with the trainer's daughter, met her at the dance, and I bought a second-hand motorbike, an old army one, and we used to go over to Pune. He didn't want a license anything in those days, and he used to get the tips for the horses. But strange to say, we never had a winner. So we saved up later on for the next season. We saved up, put the money in the post office, and then when the racing season started, I forget how long it lasted, but it wasn't all the year round, it was a season. And we used to go down to Pune races, lose our money, come back, borrow a couple of rupees for a drink. Same thing next week, next Saturday, until the money went. But Pune itself was a nice place, and Sir Victor used to own his own race course there for practicing that. Didn't do us any good. Nevertheless, we enjoyed ourselves. We were young and harum scarum. But if you had the money for other purposes, go and have a bit of